everyone, and welcome to Inside ADGRI. We are also live on Facebook, which is very exciting. I am joined today by Ed Gandia. Hi, Ed.
Hello, Rebecca.
And my lovely partner, Pam Foster. Hi, Pam.
Hi, everybody.
We're going to be in the Q&A today, and Ed will be kind of running the show here, but today we're going to talk about how to launch your writing business successfully in the middle of a pandemic or an economic crisis. Seems really timely information, and I'm really excited about this session. This is something we've never done before, but I've known Ed for years, and if there's anybody who can help us navigate this, it's Ed. So I really appreciate you being here today, Ed, and getting this together for us. It's something that's come up at ADGRI on social, over email, every session that we do. Is now the right time to launch? And what do we do? How do we approach clients knowing that they're going through their own challenges as well? So I'm excited to dive in. But before we do that, if you could flip to the agenda, just so everyone knows what to expect for today's session.
Sure.
This is kind of our over, so we'll do, he's gonna do a quick overview. We'll talk about the challenges because there are challenges happening right now. He'll talk about the opportunities, and yes, there are opportunities. There are lots of opportunities in various industries. You just kind of need to know where they are and how to get them. He's going to go over a specific model for you to try right now, and this is what I love about Ed's coaching, is that it's not theory. Ed teaches more, and I should probably just let you talk about it, but Ed teaches more from the practical understanding of what's happening. He gives you models to follow that work, that are proven to work, both for himself and all of the students he's coached. He's one of the most talented coaches I've ever known in this industry. And I've been in this specific industry for over 16 years. I've been in the direct response and writing industry for over 20. And I've never seen a coach as talented as Ed at getting people launched and getting them to land clients. So I'm very excited about this. And then he'll cover kind of the next steps. Like, how do you move forward now that you have this information? How do you actually go out and put it to use? So quickly before I head it over to you, Ed, just to give everyone a little bit of background, if you're not familiar with who Ed is, you can advance one more slide. Although I could just ramble on because I've known you for a very long time and adore you as a person. But he started writing copy in 2000. He actually was an ADGRI member, interestingly enough. We have a story on our website who had a really good career and a wife and a kid at home and a really great salary. And the idea of the writer's life was great, but he had to replace that salary. He had to take care of that family. And so he worked hard. He moonlighted as a copywriter. I think it took you 27 months to fully go full time and actually leave that job. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when I got really serious and focused. So it was a little bit longer than that, but yeah.
And so then he went full time freelance in 2006, wrote for clients until 2017. He co-wrote The Wealthy Freelancer with two other good friends of ours, Pete and Steve Slonway, and then finally started coaching in 2012. Thank goodness, because since then, everybody wanted, like, he was such this rising star. He was this amazing copywriter. Everybody wanted to know him, be like him. How did he do it? Started coaching, found out he had an amazing knack for it. And so these days, that's what he does. He coaches clients to earn more in less time, doing work for clients that they truly love. And I love that piece about you. You're not just everybody go in this market because that's where everybody is, or everybody do it this way. It really is about figuring out where the opportunity is, what you have as a writer to deliver, and really matching those things up. And he has this amazing background in sales and in copywriting, and now in coaching clients or coaching copywriters. So with that, Ed, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to you, and I'm going to go off camera, and then we'll join back at the Q&A at the end.
Awesome. Thank you, Rebecca. Appreciate that intro and welcome everybody. I'm actually going to do the same thing because it's my video is acting really wonky, and anything I can do here to just make sure that the audio stays stable and of course the slides as well, then let's try this. So again, thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be here. I wanted to kind of set the stage here and talk about the challenges that many of you are facing. So I'm assuming that if you're here, you haven't quite launched your business. Just so we understand what launching is, so we're on the same page. Launching means, you know, getting your business off the ground. So you have a website, you know who you're going to go after, you know how you're going to present yourself. And so it's launching. And then the second part of this is getting your first paying client. To me, until you get your first paying client, we're going to be talking about that today. This thing's just not really real. You know, it's an aspiration. So if you're there, you're probably feeling, oh my goodness. You know, I was ready to kind of move in this direction, but I'm fearful right now. Is this even the right time? I'm uncertain about what's going on right now and if this is even a viable path for me. You're probably overwhelmed, okay? So if you're like I am, you love to consume information. You're a true student. The problem with that, there's a good side and a bad side. The good side is you learn a lot. The bad side is that you're not really sure where to start, what to do. There's so many ideas, so many people giving you advice. You're not really sure. What do you do? And, you know, the default state, by the way, when you're in overwhelm is to do nothing, okay? And then, of course, feeling like you're alone in this game, no one to mentor you, to answer your questions, to guide you, to keep you from making big mistakes. You got AWAI with amazing resources, but maybe you're feeling like, you know, that's all good and well, but I still feel alone. I feel like I need some handholding. What you probably want instead is the opposite of those things. You want assurance that you're on the right path, that you need the feedback to get you on the right path if you're not. And you need the guidance, you know, the handholding, the Sherpa to guide you along the way, because I don't care how you approach it, how good you are, there is course correction along the way in this path. We can talk a lot about, you know, do this, do that, then do this other thing, but life doesn't quite work out that way. Life is very organic, and we want to be able to pivot as things change, as you encounter new challenges, and as you get out there and start taking action. So let's first talk about the elephant in the room, okay? Should you even consider launching your copywriting business right now? Why would anybody do that with everything that's going on in the world and all this uncertainty? The short answer is that yes, you should, but you have to go about it differently. And the good news, and I'm very serious about this, guys, I want to make sure this doesn't come across as some kind of, you know, marketing hook or anything like that. I truly believe that there are some adjustments you can make that are not very difficult and can actually make it easier for you to launch your business right now. And I'm going to come back to this in a bit. But, you know, the one thing that it's important to understand is that every market panic and every downturn presented a huge opportunity for people and for businesses that sustained some degree of calm and perspective. Okay, so we've been here before. You know, there's all this talk about unprecedented. You know, this is an unprecedented time. And, you know, it's a good word to use, but it's not technically correct. I mean, we've been here before. We in this country, we as a human race, we've been here many times before. And every one of these downturns presents huge opportunity. I've personally been through, I am not that old, but I've been through five big market panics and downturns. Getting out of college in the early 90s, there was a big recession out there. I mean, I had to deal with that right away. In 2000, the year 2000, I shifted from the construction industry selling for a distributor to contractors, and I moved into information technology because in the late 90s I was seeing all of these people making great money in IT, and I said, you know what, I want that. By the time I made the shift, let me put it to you this way: the week I went to my orientation for my new employer and I got back home that morning, I turn on the news, and that's the day the stock market crashed because of the startup internet bubble that finally just popped in March 2000. So, I mean, I started off, here we go again, you know, on a bad note. my second employer in IT, I started about 3 months before 9/11. Okay, just a new job. And then, you know, I went solo completely, full time in 2006. 2 years later, there was a financial meltdown in 2008. And of course, now we have this difficult economy. I'm more convinced that this will pass, just like all these other events. In the meantime, there's great opportunity for all of us. So what did GE, Disney, Microsoft, HP, and there are many other companies, but one thing I find very interesting is all these companies were startups during huge declines in the U.S. economy. GE, for instance, started in the panic of 1873. Disney started during the recession of 1923. HP actually launched during the Great Depression. Bill Gates and Paul Allen founded Microsoft during a recession in the mid-1970s. Okay, and you know, there are all kinds of examples of companies that you know today as huge, huge hits that started during the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, okay? When the Depression hit, nobody really knew what would happen to consumer demand. I find the story really interesting. There was Post cereals and Kellogg's, and Post did what you might think would be the sensible thing. They basically curtailed expenses, they cut back on advertising. Kellogg saw it as an opportunity, and they doubled down on advertising. They doubled their ad budget. They moved aggressively into more and smarter advertising and heavily pushed its new cereal, which is Rice Krispies. That's when it was born. And interestingly enough, they were able to take Post's number one spot, which had it for a long time, and Post has never been able to regain that position in the market. I have a really good friend of mine who's a vice president of a kitchen remodeling company. He works directly for the CEO, and when this started really kind of going down with the virus and the shutdown, I asked him. I was concerned because I thought, okay, housing is definitely going to get hit hard, and especially remodeling. People are going to cut back and in a massive way because they're fearful. And I asked him, I said, man, you just started there a few months ago. You know, what's going to happen? What's it looking like for you? He said, oh, our CEO is just doubling down in a huge way in marketing. He sees this as an opportunity to take advantage of weakness among the competition and just really come out of this thing really, really strong. So he's going in all the way. In fact, if anything, he's investing more in marketing. So that's not unique. Ever since then, I've had great conversations with other people at high levels, including founders, who have basically said, you know what, this is the time to make really smart strategic moves, especially in sales and marketing. So, you know, bottom line is there are many businesses that are doubling down on marketing right now. They're going to continue to double down. And by the way, that's not just a guess. Like I said, I've had a lot of conversations with business owners. One of the benefits and privileges that I have in coaching writers and copywriters is that I'm working with several dozen right now. And it's interesting to see the market intel that's coming from directly from the field. And I have a lot of coaching clients who are busier than ever. There's so many areas of the economy that are actually strong, but of course you'd never know it if all you tune to is the kind of mass media, which is focusing on the negative. There are many, many pockets of opportunity right now, whether it's happening currently or the businesses, you wouldn't know it based on their sales results, but they are investing heavily in sales and marketing. And mark my words, many successful businesses are going to be founded in the next few months, and many existing ones are going to thrive because they know how to stay calm. They know where the opportunities are. They know how to make the moves and where to make the right moves. Now, here is why one of the first reasons why I feel this is a great time to launch your copywriting business. I call it the first client problem. So when it comes to launching a writing business, there's a challenge that new freelancers don't address ahead of time. So they're not pretend to tackle it. They're just not aware that it's a big issue. But after doing this for over 8 years, I've seen it over and over again. There's a challenge out there that, you know, when writers first come into this, they feel that the path to success is to take a lot of writing courses to prepare. And that's a very natural tendency. And it's one that, you know, I think it's definitely very important. But after a while, what starts to happen is the 47th writing course or writing book that you buy and read is not going to get you anywhere closer to actually getting work, getting clients. So there comes a point where you have to pivot and you have to shift from education to actually taking action. I see too many writers and copywriters becoming professional students, and yet nothing is happening with their freelance writing business. Because while, you know, many of these resources are excellent, they aren't necessarily the full solution to getting your writing business off the ground. At some point, you have to land that first paying client. And once you land your first paying client, guess what? You got to land the second one and the third one. So to put it another way, nothing happens until a sale is made, until you land a paying client. That's something I learned early on in my corporate sales career. It's like all this stuff is great, but until a sale is made, nothing else in the company moves. And the company in this case being your business. Unfortunately, landing your first client is often harder than you might think. In fact, in working with hundreds of new and aspiring copywriters, I've seen that the perception of the time and effort required to land a first client is usually unrealistic, very unrealistic in many cases. So the assumption is that getting that first client won't be much harder than landing subsequent clients. So it looks something like this, right? The first step, as you can see here, would be landing that first client. It's just a step. And then the second one is going to be just as hard or as easy. And then the third one, same thing. It's even. But in truth, the process looks more like this. So finding and landing that first paying client typically takes more work, discipline, and mental and emotional energy than new freelancers realize. Okay. And this is significant because landing that first client is not only more difficult than new writers expect, it's also more critical than they realize. And this is an important point. For a new freelancer, this milestone is incredibly important to their self-esteem and their confidence and their chances of making it long-term. Most of them assume that every win carries the same weight, but I'm telling you, it doesn't. Landing that first client is way more crucial the landing your second and your third and your seventh or even 48th client, okay? I still remember the first 2-3 clients that I landed, and I'll be honest, those mean more to me even today than the bigger clients that I ended up landing down the road as I got more experience and I became better at what I did. Okay, very, very important. Why? Because those wins are what got me the motivation and the confidence to keep going. If I hadn't landed those first clients, I know I wouldn't have been able to sustain the level of effort I was putting forth. Which leads us to the all important question. Okay, well, how do you land your first paying client and how do you get that result as quickly as possible? And that's where the connection to the crisis we're seeing right now in the world, it happens, because there is a silver lining in what's happening in the world right now. Now, before we get into this, I don't want to sound like I'm diminishing what's happening in the world, okay? Not at all. But one of the challenges for new writers when the economy is booming, so during regular times, up until a few months ago, one of the biggest challenges for new writers when they're trying to launch is knowing what to offer prospects. You know, you probably don't have samples at this point, which is fine. You're not sure what prospects are going to want or need, prospective clients. And so your pitch when you're going to them becomes kind of a, I can do anything for anybody. You know, do you need a writer? I can help you write marketing materials. I can help you write sales pages or emails. And it, so it, it's, you're trying to spread your risk. You're trying to spread your offers so wide just in case, well, that's not what they need. So let me talk about the 47 things that I can do for them. And that actually works against you, okay, because it's too many options. But here's the thing. With what's happening today, it gives you a perfect excuse. It gives you something really tangible to go to market with. You know, the COVID-19 communications, communications and campaigns for a different economy, that right there gives you something to talk about. And there's never been a more important time in recent memory to have the need to communicate effectively with your customers, with your prospective customers, if you're a business, okay? Lots of different things that are happening, okay? We've already seen a huge wave of the, here's what we're doing to keep you safe, okay? Those emails have come, they're gone. And now what you continue to see are clients who already do content marketing, and they're having to revamp their entire editorial calendar. So they had all this free content that they were going to be publishing on their blog, their newsletter, and other channels that is no longer valid or could come across as tone deaf because they're not addressing where people are right now. They're not addressing what's happening, the conversation that's going on in their mind. So now you have to rip and replace all this content that you had created. It replace it with content that's more relevant, that speaks to what people are thinking about right now. That is a huge undertaking. Somebody's got to write this stuff, and somebody's got to write it quickly. Okay. The other thing is we're now starting to see it. We're, you know, once the pandemic kind of moves out of the way, and we can all agree this is probably not going to be an overnight thing, we're going to be left with a very difficult economy that no one really expected. Nobody was really prepared for. So being able to pivot as a business and think and act creatively is going to be very, very important. I mean, in fact, key to survival. So it's important that businesses are able to rethink their offers, reframe existing offers, figuring out where the real demand is, and framing their products and services and solutions to meet that demand. Again, that requires strong communications, requires really effective and clear email campaigns and landing pages and sales pages and brochures, websites, okay? So the ability to communicate effectively, I say over the next 3 to 6 months, but I think companies are going to be needing effective communications for at least the next year. And it's going to be critical. In fact, it might mean the difference between a business that survives versus a business that thrives. I can tell you that just looking at my local market, the businesses in which I was in their mailing list that they were communicating with me, the ones that had effective communications, everything else being equal, are still around. They're still emailing me. And some that were very ineffective, I already got the email a few weeks ago that they were closing their doors or at least closing until further notice. Okay, so it's quite interesting to see the contrast there. Now, if you want some examples of what I'm talking about, I'm sure you've seen them already because all you have to do is look at your inbox. Okay, so just some examples of things that I've gotten just over the past few weeks alone, some creative offers, messages, starting with communicating calm and assurance to then communicating and reframing what they have in terms of offers, in terms of content. So some examples here, you know, online tutoring company just really hitting on the fact that they know that parents are home right now trying to be a teacher, you know, trying to help their kids with distance learning and reframing their messaging, reframing their offers to really speak to the current reality that millions of parents are faced with right now. A company that does training, an online training, reframing what they do and their offers and their content to really speak to the fact that all these companies, not just healthcare companies, all these companies that have frontline workers that need to be retrained or trained and onboarded, they need different solutions. They need different approaches, okay? So you're creating guides for this, that we're creating webinars. A software company that's targeting retailers based on what's happening right now and how appointment scheduling is helping retailers survive and thrive in that post-COVID world, right? How do we reopen stores safely? Think about all the business processes and everything that would have to go into that happening. We as consumers sit back and think, well, you know, they got a scheduling thing and they got to be able to communicate when they're open. Oh my gosh, that is just the forward-facing communications. There is so much happening on the back end, much of which requires effective communications and effective, and of course, vendors who provide those solutions to enable these retailers and other businesses to open. So much going on that we don't see. We just see the tip of the iceberg. So just looking at your email inbox is a great place to see what's happening and what the opportunities might be. And there's just know that for everyone you see, there are probably 30 different opportunities under that. So just to kind of give you an idea of what I'm predicting, we're already seeing some of these phases. We're actually deep into one of the middle phases. But when I started seeing the world change in early to mid-March, it was very obvious that, you know, the companies were entering phase one with the initial and secondary crisis response. You know, this is the basic stuff that we all saw. They got old very quickly, right? The here's what we're doing. Here's how we're responding. Here's how we're keeping you safe, right? This is a lot of it was the, the attorneys getting involved and saying you have to send something out to your customers, okay, and to your prospects. We're pretty much past that, although there are some elements of that that will continue. But then very quickly, businesses have to move to updates to what they were doing, pivoting and reframing their offers so they could match the current reality and continue the conversation, again, that was going on and that has been going on in the minds of their customers and prospects. You've seen a lot of creative pivoting here, which has been inspiring to me because this is the kind of stuff I geek out on. Okay, this is going to continue. Okay, we're definitely well into phase two, and I would even say definitely deep into phase three. This started becoming a really big deal, the editorial calendar scramble, right? Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, companies that had to rip and replace content that they already, you know, had ready to go. And it was, you know, sitting in a queue, and now we can't send this stuff out. We have to reframe. We have to adjust. We have to refine. Okay. Huge undertaking. There's the continued response. Okay. So this is going to be, I think, who knows? We're talking at least 6, 12, maybe 18 months. And then hopefully sometime in about a year, nobody really knows, is riding the upswing. So as consumers become more confident, as you know, things change in terms of COVID and a vaccine, or the wave just kind of rides through the world, and you know, we have more immunity, and all those things start to happen, and you can see that we're at the beginning of the economy recovering. There's going to be a whole new set of messages, offers, and communications. Excuse me. All right. So hopefully that makes sense. One of the things you might be wondering is, look, Ed, I get it, but I don't know. I'm kind of new to this. I'm still taking a few of these courses, and or I've taken a few of them, but part of what you said is good and encouraging. The other part is I am scared to death. I don't think I'm qualified to help businesses with some of these things you're talking about. That sounds pretty advanced. You know what? You know more than you think. Again, all you have to do is pay attention to what businesses have been sending you for the past few months. And if you haven't already, create a swipe file folder in your email system just as a start. I created one very early in this process called COVID-19, and everything I got related to that in terms of marketing communications, I would just drag and drop into that folder. Okay. Some of these examples I gave you came exactly from that folder. Some very, very creative ideas. And in fact, I love the diversity. I have business to business communications there. I have business to consumer. I have local companies who have been very creative in what they're doing, and I have good and bad examples. So it's great to start a swipe file if you haven't already, because that's going to give you a better sense for the opportunities. I think if anything, you're going to see that, wow, you know, that restaurant, that I've been getting emails from, I now see the mistakes they're making, or maybe I have been seeing the mistakes they're making. Okay. And I know for me, that would make me feel a little bit more confident that, you know what, maybe I know more than I do. Maybe I can help some businesses, even other small local businesses. We're going to talk more about that. And then, you know, one of the biggest opportunities, and I talk about this all the time because it's so important, leverage what you know from your current or your previous career. Okay, the gold, okay, I think the biggest value that you have to offer as a copywriter, especially if it's business to business, is your background, your experience, your skill set, your contacts. All those things matter just as much as your writing skills. I would even say that it matters even more. Okay, I'm not saying you can get away with being a bad writer, whether you can get away with just making things up as you go. Not at all. I'm just saying there's a certain level of competency you have to achieve, after which you start seeing diminishing returns and sort of your ability to do the work. Okay, you should never stop. You should always work on your craft. But what many clients, especially in B2B, are looking for is an understanding of their industry, their business. If you've been an educator for 18 years, okay, in, you know, higher ed, wherever, it doesn't really matter. Nobody can teach another writer that overnight. Okay, you come prepackaged with experience and perspective that you can't teach somebody else overnight. That is invaluable. Okay, so if you're not feeling qualified, I want you to think about your past or current experience and how you might be able to leverage that with clients. Now, with that in mind, let's go through the model, okay? And we're going to try to move through this kind of quickly, because the whole idea here is not for you to completely absorb this, but I just at a surface level, I want you to just kind of understand it conceptually, okay? This is the model that I use when working with clients. There are three basic pillars that need to be in place in order to land that first paying client. So that's why I have client in the middle. And for you, that's going to mean landing the first paying client. Remember what I said earlier, it's extremely important to get over that hump, and not just because of the money. In fact, money's not going to matter. It's because landing that first paying client psychologically carries a huge amount of weight. Okay. So if that's our ultimate goal, the first thing you do is to come up with some strong positioning. And positioning is just a fancy word for the perception you create in the marketplace, okay? Here's what I do, for whom, and why I'm a bit different. That's all positioning is, okay? The second pillar is prospecting, okay? And this is just a message of, hey, Mr. Prospect, I know this is happening right now. Do you need help with that? Okay, that's prospecting. It's just offering to help. And finally, it's converting the leads you generate from your prospecting effort into a paying client by making them an offer they can't refuse, to borrow from The Godfather. So let's get into this a little bit better. When you're positioning yourself fairly well and you're prospecting and you're getting responses to your prospecting effort and you're starting conversations with prospects about helping them, that's when the confidence starts building. And confidence is huge, okay? Confidence doesn't come first. You have to take action. Notice you have to position yourself well, and then you have to knock on doors, if you will. Not literally, but knock on doors. You have to make your outreach, and the confidence comes when you start getting responses. When you are prospecting and converting some of those prospects into paying clients, guess what? That's where the income comes in. Okay. And as you continue to convert and start landing one client and then a second one and a third one, you start getting momentum. Okay. So much of success in this business is about getting and sustaining momentum. Okay. And it just becomes a virtuous cycle, if you will, that's really, really powerful. So let's talk about each of these elements. Positioning. Okay. This is I could spend a day talking about positioning, but here's what you need right now. You just need starter positioning. Okay. And it's just what it sounds. It's a starting point. Okay. So consider building on a foundation of what's happening in the world right now and the fact that businesses need to be creative and resourceful to survive and thrive. Okay. So this is not about helping businesses take advantage of people right now. That's not what I'm saying at all. This is about responding to the current reality. You know, just as a quick aside, some of the most creative problem solving that I've seen in the past 2 months has come from the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry, you know, it's unique in that restaurants typically have only 2 to 3 weeks worth of cash flow, cash on hand. So, you know, you go over 3 weeks, most of them are out of business. Okay. And they're waiting for government aid that, you know, may not come right away. So they have to be resourceful. They have to be innovative. And it's amazing what I've seen. I could spend hours talking about this. I just heard about this restaurant in Chicago that made 70% of its revenue selling pizza slices. So it's a pizzeria. Of course, that suddenly was gone because of all the, you know, the lockdown and the restrictions. So the owner was extremely resourceful. He started thinking, and I don't know how he got this idea, but he realized that he had these really huge hot ovens that, I mean, the temperature would go up over 1,000 degrees. And he pivoted from baking pizzas to creating, melting and molding plastics in order to create PPEs, personal protective equipment, for frontline workers. And he's just turned his pizzeria from a pizzeria to a manufacturer of PPE. I just absolutely love that. Okay, so again, coming back to positioning, speak to the current reality, okay, and what's happening in your positioning and your web copy and your LinkedIn profile. So for instance, you know, just go ahead and flat out say, hey, I help software companies communicate and market effectively during uncertain times. Or I help healthcare companies communicate effectively in the current crisis. Okay. And of course, you know, as we kind of, the attention shifts from the virus to the economic uncertainty or downturn, then shift that to say in the current downturn or in a challenging economy. Okay. So you can still refine that as we move through this process. Again, you want to leverage your background. You want to leverage your contacts, your knowledge, and just create a very simple website. It's never been easier to do it with a website builder like Squarespace or Wix. And this will be your hub that will make you real to you and to others. The other thing I would do is update your LinkedIn profile with just basic information in the title and in the description, in the headline, I should say. Technically, LinkedIn calls it a headline. Use keywords your prospect would use to find you. So healthcare copywriter. And don't be afraid to add, you know, I help healthcare companies market more effectively or write better content that speaks to the current environment, something along those lines. Okay. So it should all be aligned. That's all part of positioning. And again, it's just a way to start. It's starter positioning. You don't have to have it all figured out. Just start by speaking to the current situation. All right. Prospecting. Let's talk about that one. Warm email prospecting is great for this. Okay. This is something that I've been teaching my coaching clients for 9 years now. It's extremely effective. And I'll show you an example here in a second. So email prospecting is going to be a great one. Become active on LinkedIn. Okay. Just posting, sharing, connecting, making the right personalized connection requests. Start tapping your network. Okay. This is a great place to start. That's often overlooked by new writers. In fact, I've found that in half the cases, your first client or two are going to come through your network, interestingly enough, not from people you know directly, but from people you know who refer you to people they know. So it's typically a referral. There's a huge opportunity right now, as you can imagine, I've been alluding to this, with local businesses, especially those you already support. Okay. And you know what? You have an edge if you're already a customer. It's that pet supply store. It's that restaurant. It's that doctor's office. Okay. Think about all the local businesses that are trying to do this themselves. They don't really know how. Now, typically the problem is, okay, up until 2 months ago, the problem is those were not necessarily the best clients because they can't really afford you. Okay. Right now you have an opportunity to help them and be able to work out a deal. I'll talk more about this in a second, where they get what they want. You get a sample, you get confidence, you get to work with a real client on a project where you're making a real difference. So let me just take a step back real quick and just show you a couple of examples of warm emails that I mentioned here on the previous slide. Okay, so real quick, subject line, your piece on dual sourcing. Hey, I love how you're handling your COVID-19 customer communications. So you're pointing out something you saw that you're doing. I was particularly impressed with your recent piece on dual sourcing and the impact from Asia. I work with this target market to help them, you know, write marketing materials, and I'm curious if you're looking for some help reworking or repurposing content marketing assets in light of what's happening right now. I've worked in this industry for X number of years, so I know the landscape. Here's a link to a page on my site if you want to learn more about me, would it make sense to connect this week? Now, obviously, this is something you would send based on leveraging your expertise in a particular industry or sector or market, okay? Now, I don't want, for those of you who think, I don't know if I really want to work in that industry, that's fine. Okay. Lots of opportunities to help, again, local or regional businesses. All right, so this is a great example. Subject line here reads, loved your last email. Hi, first name. I've been on your mailing list for a while because I'm a work from home professional and have used you guys to help fix one of my laptops. So this is a small IT services outfit, okay? I love that you reach out to your customers and newsletter subscribers with an update on new security tips and measures, especially since so many people are working from home for the first time ever. I'm writing because I'm a freelance business writer, and I was curious if you might need help communicating with your audience during this challenging time. I'd like to help a few local businesses with anything from customer emails, newsletters, or sales materials that need to walk the fine line between selling and being sensitive to the new market reality. I'd like to offer you my first project for free. No catch, no strings, no gotchas. I'm just trying to help our local business community, and I love what you guys are doing. I'm a happy customer. Would it make sense to connect this week to see how I could help? Okay, it would be very difficult for this business owner not to at least reply, okay? And there's a very, very good chance that it would open up an email conversation that could lead to a project, all right? So great example of, you know, how you could tap the local market. So let's talk about, we've been talking about prospecting. Let's talk about the third pillar, which is convert. Now, your goal is not to make a living from the first client or two, okay? Your goal is to overcome that first client problem that we talked about earlier. Remember that huge step. So think of your first two or three clients as starter clients. Your goal is to help them. And by doing so, boost your confidence. Right now, the most important thing is to boost your confidence, not to make a great living. And, you know, then what you do is as you start landing clients, you start trading up one at a time as you build your experience, your samples, and your confidence. It's kind of like a car. You know, when you start out in life, you have that really crappy car. It's not crappy. It's just old. You know, it's old. It doesn't have air conditioning. And then you work your way up in the world. And then 2 years later, you buy a slightly better car. You trade in the old one and you buy a slightly better one. A few years later, you're doing a little better for yourself. So you trade up again. Same concept here. Okay. So how do you get over this hump? You make them an offer they can't refuse. Okay. One great way. I mean, worst case, free help on the first project. Okay. Or you could just offer something for like 90% off what it should be worth. Okay. So let's say this report or, you know, rewriting their entire website copy, instead of $2,500, $250. I like charging something, especially if your confidence level is, you know, okay to decent, just because when somebody's paying for something, they take it a little bit more seriously than for free. But, you know, I'm not hung up on whether it's 250 or zero. Another thing you can do is pay me only if you love it or if it works or if it's very well received. Okay. Look, again, we're not trying to earn a significant income with your first couple of clients. We're just trying to get over that hump. All right. So, guys, I know I threw a lot at you very quickly. What I would say is this. I would encourage everyone here in this session, what are we up to, 300 people, this is insane, 300 people, to get started, okay? I've given you what you need, and, you know, it's 80% of the game is about getting started even when you don't feel ready. Let me give you a hint. I work with a lot of writers in my coaching business. Even the ones who are earning a very healthy six-figure income don't feel ready. Don't feel ready to take the next step, you know, to take their business up a notch or two, okay? So it's very natural for you to feel that way. In fact, I would say that if you don't feel ready, if you feel fearful, and you get conceptually what I just shared with you, but it's just the thought of getting out there scary, that's a good sign. That tells me that that's where the growth is. You know, there's a quote out there, I forget who to attribute it to, but everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear. And same thing here. So you'll never feel 100% ready. Just, you know, put these ideas into play. I think we have an amazing opportunity right now because of what's happening in the world to get started, because you have a ton of businesses that need help communicating, and they need help communicating about one very specific thing. So you no longer have to guess, what do I say I can help them with? Okay. Now you have something very, very clear, and worst case, and not that it's bad, just in your local community or regional area alone, there are lots of opportunities for, again, those starter clients. You're not going to get stuck there forever, but it could be a great, great place to start and to make a real difference in your community and with a lot of businesses that are struggling right now. So let's get to questions. I'm going to bring back video and we'll see if it works.
It's back and you sounded great, Ed. This was so awesome. We had such big enthusiasm in the Q&A every step of the way.
Awesome.
I think one of the biggest takeaways was this idea of starter clients, that it's not, you're not building your life on those first two clients. It's like you just got to get through them to get to that next stage of your career. And that really resonated with a lot of people. And we haven't talked about it that way before. So thank you.
Absolutely. I'll just, you know, just so you know that I eat my own medicine, I'll give you a couple. I remember in that first group of five clients that I had a good friend of mine who had a training company. Sounds great, right? You know what it was? It was her. She was a training company. And she was a contractor, and she did software training. And I wrote a lead generating letter for her for free. And it was very, very effective. I had a second cousin of mine who was a consultant in the food and beverage industry. He needed a letter of introduction because he had just gone out on his own as a consultant, and he didn't know how to pitch himself, how to introduce himself. So we had a couple of short conversations, and I wrote something. I mean, so we're talking non-glamour stuff.
Okay, so this is a good question. So what is the best way to find out if a company has a budget for marketing? We have a lot of people in here who've been working for people who don't have the budget. They've been doing practice clients. They're ready to make that transition. But even if you're just starting out and you're talking to a client, what's a good kind of way to find out, do they have the budget for me or not?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's a two-part answer. The part one is that at first it doesn't really matter, especially because of what's going on in the world right now. And I gave you the example of local companies or regional companies. It doesn't matter if they have the budget, because the need is really high right now, and they know it. They know that the nuances of their communications are going to matter now more than ever. Okay, so you're speaking to someone who already understands that for the most part, and your offer to them is not going to be a lot of money, if anything. Okay, so in terms of your first two or three clients, I would say that right now it doesn't really matter that much. Now, after that, you need to start kind of, you know, bringing it up. And I don't get hung up in, you know, number of employees or revenue numbers. You know, is there a formula? Because those formulas don't work across the board. Okay, so they're kind of meaningless. You know what the best way is? The best way is to go to their website, see if they at least have a blog, or they have marketing materials that you can download. They have a resources page with some brochures or maybe even some case studies, some reports or white papers. They don't have to have all these things. I'm looking for a little bit of this, because that tells me that they understand content marketing. Maybe they have a newsletter. And if they have those things, that means they have a budget. So it's an indirect way of increasing the probability that you're going after the right businesses.
So that's another question, kind of an offshoot, that going after the right businesses. We've had a couple of questions about Upwork. But so Chris Bass is saying, the companies I am targeting are national. Should I just go local at first? Also, do you recommend going on Fiverr just to get clients' experience?
Yeah, so I don't recommend necessarily going to Fiverr or Upwork. And here's why. The real question is not should I go there. The real question is what is going to be the potential benefit compared to the potential cost of going there. So a lot of people think of Upwork and Fiverr as, yeah, but you have all these prospects there, right? That's where they're congregating. What they don't realize is you have like this group of prospects, and then you have this group of freelancers vying for that limited business, okay? So even though you see thousands and thousands of opportunities, you have tens of thousands of freelancers, and it becomes kind of a race to the bottom. I'm not saying you can't start there, okay? I'm just saying, look, don't look at it as a shortcut. It's going to be a different set of challenges going there. So if you're going to have to work either way, I strongly recommend that you go a different route at first and maybe use Upwork as a backup and as a last resort if this isn't working out, because you can knock on some very strategic doors yourself and get going and get that early momentum and get over that first client hump and not have to deal with, you know, the Upwork mess where you're competing with people from all over the world who are willing to do it for a fraction of what you've got. And again, even though at first the money doesn't really matter that much, it's a mess.
Can we talk a little bit about pricing? This one comes up a lot. So this person's specific question is, I'm in a Rust Belt area, but with a few contacts in Chicago, should I have two charge scales? Can you talk a little bit about this idea of fees and where you fall? I think is a little bit of a misconception of like where you are is where you are, and therefore you have to charge within that area, but it's just such a bigger opportunity. But how do you handle those fees when you're just starting out?
So the way that I do it, for again, when you're starting out, you know, it's almost like a lot of these questions, we have to talk about your first two or three clients and then after that, right? See, first two or three clients, honestly, what I do, like in this program, I give everyone a master fee schedule with a like 32 different projects and a fee range for each. And then my recommendation is use your experience and your confidence level to determine how much you're going to take off from that. So you could basically go down that column of fee ranges and take anywhere but from 50% off to 80% off. Okay. Which sounds drastic. Again, we're just trying to land the first couple of clients. So overall, that's what I would recommend. Now let's talk about the, you know, I live in this rural area. I've seen what some of these people charge elsewhere. There's no way I could get away with that where I live. I want you to start thinking way beyond your city, town, state, province. Okay. I want you to think globally. Most clients don't really care where you are. Okay. And if you think in terms of location and this is where I live and this is what my economy can support, you're going to think really, really small, especially if you live in a rural area. So I want you to think, I got clients who live, I mean, out in the middle of nowhere. I just spoke with one this morning who just came on board. He's actually in Australia. They live 6 hours away from any major city. Okay. They're out in the middle of nowhere and they're doing extremely well, because of thought broadly. They don't think physical location. We're in a global economy right now and most clients don't really care. So I would charge professional level rates, okay, for what you do, and then just go after prospects who are in industries and in locations where those fees are fine. Don't go after prospects, you know, small companies in a economically depressed area of the world.
Excellent. And guys, if I make a funny face, it's because I'm reading or typing responses. So it's not that I'm disagreeing with Ed or thinking about something else. I just noticed my face was like really mad. Okay. So Sandy wants to know, how much of the work as a copywriter is writing versus consulting? Because from what I'm hearing, what a freelance business writer does is kind of what I envision a consultant does. Am I misunderstanding something here?
Okay, so it depends on your experience. I've worked with people who came from marketing or they did some of this writing at work and either in PR or marketing or sales, and they know more than just the writing. They're really good at the sales process, the marketing process. And so they bring more to the table from day one than somebody else who doesn't have that experience. If you have it, then I think that could be a very nice value add when you get brought in, you know, when a client hires you. You got to be careful not to come across as, no, what you guys are doing is wrong. Let me tell you what you need to do. Always let the client lead, but don't be afraid to offer some ideas. Hey, you know, would you mind if I maybe give you a thought or a suggestion here? Would that be, oh, yeah, absolutely. Go for it. And then you bring it up. So there's a way to do it. However, if you don't have that, don't worry about it. You will develop that as you go. And you're right. That's a more of an advanced question in that your biggest value add as you get more experience will be that consulting piece. You're not necessarily going to sell it as a separate item. Okay, well, for consulting, it's going to be this much, and for writing these marketing pieces, this much. It could either be built into the writing, or you could sell it as a separate deliverable, which is a really advanced thing, where you help them kind of strategize and plan first. And then if they like that, then they can hire you for the writing as well. So there's all kinds of things you could do later. But right now, I wouldn't worry about it. You don't need to come into this with that kind of experience. You could just learn as you go.
So Ed is one of the most knowledgeable people in this industry, and this question is actually a little bit outside of the scope of this specific event, but I know that you already have a podcast on this topic. Em is saying this is stepping out way out of the scope of this webinar, but I'm curious if anybody offers support for managing healthcare, et cetera, as a freelancer. This thought always is lurking in the back of my mind, even before I start out, causing me great pause. Can you do a quick kind of both not having to go full freelance, all the options, and then any healthcare options that you know of for someone looking to go straight freelance?
So I'm sure if I understand the question, is the question, hey, I got a full-time job in healthcare. How can I do this as a side hustle?
No, the fear is I'm leaving. If I become a freelancer, what am I going to do about healthcare?
Oh, about your health insurance.
Yep.
Gotcha. Certainly not an expert in this area. I think the good news, and let's just talk U.S., I'm going to assume that, you know, this person is in the U.S., is, you know, when I started it, when I went full-time in 2006, the big question was, can we get health coverage? Because back then it wasn't guaranteed. Okay, since the ACA passed, you can't be denied health insurance. And there are a few options. You could buy through the exchanges. You can buy directly through a broker. What I would recommend is this. Look, if you go to an insurance broker who sells health insurance in your state, that's typically going to be the best starting place. And the reason is you're probably not going to have the knowledge to compare different plans because most of us don't. It's really confusing. They can do all of that for you. And based on your specific situation, they'll ask you questions and give you three of the best options. So they could give you amazing clarity. And here's the cool thing. The way brokers get paid, you don't have to pay any more than you would pay if you were going straight to the insurance company. The insurance company pays them separately. So basically, you're getting free advice and you know, narrowing down your options, which I think is the biggest thing. I know for me, I didn't want to kind of sort through that whole universe. I wanted someone who could net it out for me and give me two or three options to consider. In terms of how you find one, my recommendation would be to ask around, you know, word of mouth, see if somebody you know knows an insurance broker. And they can take into account the health exchanges from what I understand and everything. So they're not going to, you know, keep you from that. But that's what I would do. So that was the first question. What was the second question?
That was the main point. Yeah. I was just asking then also that there are other options. You don't have to go freelance. If you want to try this out, you could moonlight like Ed did for a while to see how much money you make, to see if you can make that jump. And honestly, you don't have to go freelance. There are other opportunities working for clients on their payroll. I mean, that is an option as well. So I know there are.
Absolutely. So definitely explore all the options. You know, maybe your spouse can get health insurance at work and you can get on their policy. The other thing is there are indemnity plans out there. I was on one for a couple of years. It saved us a ton of money. If you do a Google search for health insurance and B2BLauncher.com, health insurance, B2BLauncher.com, you'll see a couple of podcast episodes I've done on this. Some really interesting options out there. Of course, always consult with, you know, your accountant and a broker and people who know insurance. I'm not giving advice, but yeah, you're a good point, Rebecca. Lots of different options. I did this on the side while I maintained my steady paycheck in my benefits. And once I saw that I was growing and getting a consistent income, I knew that it was safe to start thinking about leaving.
I like that. Yeah. Figuring out first, like, do I have enough opportunity, especially if you're doing it as a moonlighting, if all of a sudden you can't take on any more clients because you just don't have the time because of your day job, you can start to project and say, okay, I'm actually meeting my income goals part-time. What if I had 40 more hours a week? All of a sudden, things can look very different for you.
Exactly.
For those of you asking about the slides, yes, we will send a playback note tomorrow, and it will have the slides as well as the link to this recording. A lot of people asking about the insurance website that you just gave. What was that?
Oh, it's if you Google health insurance and then B2BLauncher.com, B the number two, BLauncher.com, Google will show you the results to two of my podcast episodes where I interviewed several professionals on different options.
Cool. I just typed it for
health insurance. Yeah. You know, I'm a big proponent of the, you know, what Mark Ford, Michael Masterson calls the chicken entrepreneurship model, which is you keep your day job, you build this thing as a side hustle, and then when you see that it's consistent, that, and first of all, that you like it, then you quit your day job. I mean, that's what took me 27 months. And but I'm glad I did it this way. It could be exhausting because, you know, all that free time that you had, a big chunk of it suddenly has to go out the door. However, I will say, not to scare you, because you become so much more efficient. When you only have so many hours to do this on the side, you get to work. You know, you stop messing around. You stop getting distracted. You get to work and you make it happen. But then toward the end, I was working 7 days a week. It was ridiculous. And I knew at that point that I was going to go. One thing that I strongly recommend is, and this is what I did. I saved after taxes and some small expenses that I had, everything that I earned from my copywriting business on the side, I put in a savings account because when I left my day job, I wanted to have several months worth of living expenses so I could sleep at night. So that's another thing I recommend.
This is so Ben is asking, I've done some writing and some courses. I'm an 80 by Infinity member, used to work in graphic design, written a few pieces for clients. So he's actually got a little bit of momentum here. I'm also a public speaking coach with experience working with clients. Would your Biz Builder program be a good fit for me too? Or is it just for brand newbies?
No, I've had all kinds of people. I've even had people who had clients at some point, but then they went back to work or they kind of let their business go and they went in a different direction. Now they're trying to come back. So for relaunching, certainly. And for somebody like you, the way I would see it is you just have a head start, which is great. But you still want to walk through every step. So yes, bottom line is it would be a great fit for you, but you need to be open-minded enough to look, let me still walk through all the steps because I need to get back to fundamentals and do it right from the start. I work with a lot of people who have already launched. They've had very minimal success and they're done trying that. So they start with me. We scrap what they have because in many cases it's just easier to scrap and start from the beginning. And we do it right from the very start.
Excellent. I can't stress that enough as well. Sometimes we think we've done it one way, and if you just go from the beginning through again, you're going to find that one little misturn or misstep that you made that could have set everything else in a totally different direction. So yeah. I do think it's an important, just as to take the time to even audit what you've done so far.
Yeah, and don't feel bad about it. It's called a sunk cost fallacy, where we get too hung up on, yeah, but I've already invested all this time and energy doing that. It's a sunk cost, meaning it's already happened. Just let it go. Now, don't destroy it. There might be things you can pluck from that copy and from those messages, but for the most part, you should be willing to be open-minded enough to start from the very beginning and do it right.
Love that. All right, guys, we're going to do a last call for questions because I've cleared the Q&A. So if you have any last questions for Ed, go ahead and post them. While we're waiting for that, just a quick note from Donald Patrick Harris. Ed Gandia, you knocked it out of the park. Affirms what I have been thinking about lately. Most of us will never feel prepared. So go ahead and start now. You have also made it crystal clear that the copywriting business is built by getting your first client and another. 99% of us will start at the bottom of our own business and work ourselves up to the dream. Thank you.
Man, thank you for that. I appreciate it. I didn't tell the story, but while we're waiting for questions real quick, what got me thinking along these lines and helped me grow my business, the way I'm teaching you guys to launch and build it is the same way I did it, okay? In the same way I've helped over 600 new writers and copywriters do it, trading up one step at a time. In 2006, there was a story in Dateline. I think it was Dateline. It's one of these news shows. That there was this Canadian guy in British Columbia, kid, didn't have any resources, had a low-paying job, and he had this crazy idea. He said, you know, I just found this red paper clip in my desk. I wonder what I could get for it if I barter my way up. So he bartered that paper clip for some handmade decorated pens that somebody had. And I think he was doing this on Craigslist. He took the pens and he traded up for something else. He bartered. This was all bartering. There was no money exchange. I think it was like 28 trades later, you know what he was able to trade? To a house. He was able to trade whatever he had. I think it was a couple of cars to a house. So he started with a red paper clip, which had no intrinsic value, and made 28 individual trades until he was able to get a house. That's when it clicked for me. I said, that's exactly what needs to happen here. I've been thinking all along about, I got to get like these types of clients, right? The IBMs of the world, and I'm here. That's a massive jump. Forget IBM. I'm just going to keep my, you know, my line of vision is going to be like right here. I just need to land that next client, that first client. And I was so excited when I finally landed a client, a paying client. And then, okay, I need to trade up a little bit. I need to barter up. And then another step and another step. And over 27 months, I was able to replace my six-figure income. It's crazy, but that's how it happened. I look back and I just know the hard work that went into it. It doesn't seem like magic. It was a lot of work, but it was all baby steps, one baby step at a time.
We talk about all the time, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah, I hate that.
Like looking for the next step instead of trying to look down the path at the 27 steps in front of you, which is so intimidating, but it's just one next step, one little step forward. I love that. Yeah. So what do you do? It's just a couple more questions. What do you do if a company already has a copywriter or does their copywriting in-house? How do you navigate that conversation? Is there still an opportunity there?
There is. And if that's what they tell you, why they say no thanks, we already do this in-house. Most writers will say, okay, well, thanks for letting me know. And, you know, sorry to bother you, that kind of thing. There is a much better backup. Say, fantastic. In your mind, it should be like, that's a good sign. That means they are writing. In fact, they're writing enough that they have a staff writer in-house. And then the second thing, you should thank them and then say, would you mind keeping my information handy in case you ever have any overflow work or your situation changes? So staff writers, believe me, when companies hire a staff writer or copywriter, they keep them extremely busy. The way marketing works is it's an ebb and flow. And many times there's these peaks because they're doing these product launches or they're doing these things. They can't handle it all internally. And that's overflow work that would come to you. A marketing director's job, part of their job is to have a file, okay, digitally or printed, of people they could turn to when that happens. If you think about it, if they don't have that file, I mean, that will impact their job performance. So when you're asking for that, I want you to ask in confidence because you're helping them do their job. Don't ask in a, you know, kind of a shy way. Say, hey, would you mind keeping my information handy in case you ever have overflow work or your needs change? It's a very smart thing to ask. And you know what? They're going to say yes. And then just follow up every couple of months, you know, with some useful piece of information or whatever. I'm telling you, I've seen it happen too many times. People give up. They don't offer, you know, hey, keep my information handy. They don't follow up, and then somebody else gets hired.
That person could, their copywriter could resign, or they could have this amazing opportunity. This happens at ADBI all the time. We have a new idea. All of our copywriters are booked, so we're just not going to do it. Like, we want to take advantage and be able to scale as fast and as quickly as possible. So by having that backup copywriter, like, oh, I've got this guy I can call who can help us take advantage of this opportunity. I love that. That is a great way of thinking, and I like the phrasing that you gave as well of how to plant that seed. Okay, so just a couple little questions. Kelsey wants to know, oh my goodness, now I'm thinking of pivoting to B2B, but haven't taken any training in B2B yet. I can't catch up in time for June 9th. What to do? Like, what should they do? Is there a way? And I would want to like back this up for 1 second. I remember asking you one time, what's the best project to learn in B2B? What's the hottest thing? And you said, there isn't. I mean, there's so many opportunities. You don't know what's going to get you invited to the dance. So just put yourself out there and see what they need. So what do you do? Could someone launch a business without having extensive experience in B2B? How does that all work? Where do they need to be at this point?
All right, so I'm going to answer this question, and I want you to understand that this is coming from the heart, okay? This is not some kind of marketing tactic or anything like that. Honestly, this is what I would do today. What I would do today is the same thing that I did in 2004, 2005, 2006, okay? Back then, I didn't have the resources you guys have, okay? Right now, you have an amazing library of resources through AWAI that you could purchase in a matter of minutes. You have access to step by step how to complete X project or this other project. So you have that, number one. Number two is adopt a different mindset. Rather than say, oh my gosh, there's no way I can get up to speed by June 9th. Okay. You don't have to get up to speed on the craft by June 9th. What you do is you start and then you learn along the way. You know how I got I didn't know how to write this stuff. You know, I knew how to write and I was doing writing for my own work. But I didn't have the step-by-step. I didn't have the templates. I didn't have the guides. So what I did is I offered certain services that I was confident if I had the resources, I'd be able to complete. Nobody ever asked me, have you written one of these before? You know what the question was? Do you write X? Do you write case studies? Do you write blog posts? And I would say, yes, they didn't ask me if I'd ever written. If they asked me, I would have been honest. So what I did, and I still remember a great example is somebody said, hey, would you be interested in writing some of our case studies? And I said, absolutely. I rushed home and I bought a book from Steve Slonwhite, as a matter of fact. At the time, he was selling an ebook, a PDF ebook on how to write case studies. So here's the thing. You learn as you go. There's no such thing. I know this is the way many of us have been trained and raised, that you go through this schooling and then after 4 years, you're ready. And here, here's what I would do. I would buy, like, I think you guys have like a B2B program that's got kind of a primer on all these different types of projects, right?
Use Slonwhite's high performance B2B program.
I would buy that and keep it on my virtual bookshelf. And I would do a run through. Just let me skim through it just to kind of get a lay of the land.
Oh, I know what the words are when they say landscape. Yeah.
What the different projects are. And you know more than you think. That's the interesting thing is you go through it like, yeah, I know that. You put it on your virtual bookshelf and then you start launching. And as you get opportunities, guess what? You rush to that chapter and you open it up and you learn as you go. My first case study, by the way, was that same client. It took me like 24 hours, like literally – not in a day, I mean like 24 actual work hours to complete this page and a half case study because I was learning as I went. And I mean, it's guys, that's the way it's done. You ask anybody who started like back then or before, it was the same thing. So if you wait until, oh, I need, you know, a few months, you're missing on an opportunity right now to really go to market with a very specific message. Anyway, that's what I would do. Today, I would do what I did back then, get started and learn along the way.
Fast forward to today, and Ed actually wrote our program on writing case studies using the method that he eventually put together.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Such a full circle kind of thing there. I love that. we were actually interviewing Gordon Graham, that white paper guy, recently, and he said the same thing. You know, what do you do if a client asks you? You say yes, and then you figure it out. ADVI has a whole catalog. If there's a way, there's a project that companies want to pay you to write, we likely have a training program on it written by the expert who has a proven methodology for it. And they write these programs. Ed's case study program is awesome. It just, you just follow through his step-by-step thing and wham, you know how to write a case study. So I'm with you. Just say yes. One last question on that though. When a client asks you to do something you've never done before, how do you figure out the time frame of when you would be able to have it done?
So what? Yeah, great question. I was always nervous about that. Here's what you do. Okay. This is something you can do even when you're advanced. Turn it back on the client. When do you need a draft? And here's why. I didn't ask that question for many, many months after I started. I always assumed that they needed it by X time. I was working my tail off. When I started asking it, in 80% of the cases, the deadline they were giving me was way past the deadline that I would have given myself. Okay. So ask. That's like, yeah. Well, I don't know. Could you have it in a couple of weeks? And I'm thinking, man, I was going to offer in 3 days. You know, yeah, I can have it in a couple of weeks. Let's say this date. That work? Yeah, that works. So first of all, ask them. Many times they're going to give you a longer window. And here's what I would say. If they throw it back at you and say, well, it depends. When can you have it? Or they say, can we have it in 3 days? This is going to sound crazy. Say yes. This is assuming you don't have a day job and, you know, you have some time. Just say yes and just figure it out and you will get done. You will get it done. Okay. I had to pull, when I had my day job, I had to pull at least 3 or 4 all-nighters in that 27-month period. Okay. Sorry to say that it really sucked at the time, but you know what? When you say yes, you get it. If you say, now, unless it's unreasonable, if they say, can we have it tomorrow? You just know there's no way. You can't learn how to write a white paper and write a white paper in a day. It's just not going to happen. Okay. So part of it should be, okay, I'm scared, but is it within the realm of possibilities? Yes. Just say yes. And if you need a couple of days more, just ask for that at the beginning, not on the due date, and then give yourself a little bit of a window and just get to work. And, you know, no Netflix. You know, no distractions, no social media, get to work and get it done. And then you just learn along the way.
Ed, this was so great. I mean, everybody's just blowing up crazy about how much I love learning from you and how awesome this was. This is exactly what you experienced through the business, the B2B business launcher. If this is something that you want, if you want his style of training and his depth of expertise, he's already been through this. He's trained 600 people to launch their businesses and land clients. I mean, he's got the track record. I couldn't endorse him more if I tried, if I wanted to. Definitely do this. You will succeed. It's the guarantee is amazing. If you check it out, you're going to land your first client. So get in there, do it. I really encourage you to sign up for it. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at askrebecca@awai.com. I'll be happy to get you the answers. But Ed, just thank you so much for this. Do you have any other closing thoughts before we shut this monthly Inside ADVI down?
I would say, you know, something I said a little bit earlier, whether you work with my team and with me or you try this on your own, you know what? Don't wait. Get started now. Seriously, while the emotion is high, while you're inspired, while you got a spark of momentum here, just get started. I mean, when you wait, it just – every day that goes by, the probability that you'll do it goes down and down. Know that it's very common to feel scared and not ready. In fact, if you don't feel ready, that's probably a good chance that what you really want is on the other side of that fear. Okay. So yeah, whether we do it together or you do it on your own, doesn't matter. I just want you to get started. That's how big things happen.
Awesome, Ed. Thank you. And thank you guys for joining us today. I will send you the playback and slides tomorrow. These Inside ADVI sessions are created from your requests. This one obviously was a very timely topic that was requested, and so we were able to go and grab Ed and have him put this together. But if there's a topic that you need covered, definitely email me again at askrebecca@awai.com. If there is a way that we can help you move forward with your writing business, count us in. We want to put these together for you. So again, Ed, thank you. Thank you everyone for joining us. Pam, thank you for the Q&A. And we'll see you all very soon.
Thanks. Bye, everyone. Bye.